Chris loves that spanking line. All right, it's What You Need to Know, brought to you by Morongo. Play it safe, good times. Greg, what do you got?
So the Sacramento Kings lost last night to the Charlotte Hornets after they were up 123-115 with just over a minute left to play. They ended up losing 127-126. George, what do you have to say about the Sacramento Kings?
What I'll say is this, okay? It was Luke Walton was actually trending yesterday after this loss. Look, you can make the case that Magic Johnson may not have been a great executive, okay? I love Magic Johnson. I think that Magic Johnson is one of the top four or five greatest players of all time, in my opinion. And, you know, he wasn't – you're not great
here
at everything.
Here comes the setup. When you're compliment.
You're not – hold on. You're not great at everything. However, if there's one thing that he – got 1,000,000% right when he was the executive of the Lakers was that he knew Luke Walton was not a good coach. And Luke Walton is not a good coach, man. Okay? I watch these Sacramento Kings games because I watch everybody. Okay? So I'm watching these games, and man, like, at least when he was with the Lakers, you could say, it's his first job, whatever. Like, you know, you're going to make rookie coach mistakes. He's making the same damn mistakes he was making here with the Lakers. And this team isn't as good as those Lakers teams with those young kids. He's just not a head coach. Some guys are just not head coaching material, and Luke Walton is in that category.
You know, it's just on this Luke Walton story. So I didn't get to see what happened last night with Sacramento and New Orleans. I didn't see it. But I don't like to hear this. You know, I mean, I want Luke Walton to succeed. I want him to be good. You know, I feel like we got to see his whole career, you know, grow up from Arizona to the Lakers and then going from playing into coaching. And I think, George, when you look at like Sean McVay, every assistant coach, it seems, gets picked off, right? Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, they become head coaches. You come to work for Sean McVay for a year, maybe two, boom, you're like almost guaranteed a head coaching job. I feel like Luke Walton, people feel like, well, he played for Phil. He was sitting right next to Steve Kerr on those same teams that we were just talking about. So he's got to know what he's doing. He's got to be a head coach. And you're telling me he's not a good head coach. What part of last night, because I do know you watch, because as much as you talk about me taking selfies, I see you taking selfies on Instagram watching every NBA basketball game there is. What happened in that game? How did Sacramento fall apart like that? And why is it the coach's fault?
Because they're the worst defensive team in NBA history, and that's not even hyperbole. Like, that is literally, like, the numbers will bear that out. And I just think Luke was never a good defensive coach even here. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just – the Lakers' defense, I felt at times – like, his last year they were middle of the pack, but they were always bottom of the barrel, Greg, right? They were – in the 3 years he was here, only that last year were they middle of the pack – because and that was because LeBron was here, but the two previous years, I want to say they were like 28th and like 29th or 28th and 30th.
I try not to think about those years because they were terrible offensively and defensively. So yeah, Luke Walton was not a good coach.
Let me just ask you guys both this question real quick. Could Luke Walton be a good coach if he had really good players? In other words,
he had LeBron. Yeah.
Okay. But for a year when LeBron was hurt, no.
Right, but, I mean, they weren't even that good even when he had LeBron.
Okay, but I'm just asking, like, if Luke Walton was the coach of this team, this Lakers team.
No.
Yes. He went 25-2 with the Warriors when they had that amazing team.
Right.
Like, ever since then.
But you're not winning a championship with Luke Walton as your head coach, if that's what you're asking me.
You mean to tell me that Luke
25-2 in the regular season. In the playoffs, you have to actually know how to scheme things, man. Like, yes.
Okay,
They're not winning a championship with Luke Walton, even with Anthony Davis and LeBron.
Okay, so Luke Walton.
Look, there's a reason Magic Johnson wanted him gone, okay? And I'm pretty sure, even though that was never public, I'm sure LeBron was like, what is this?
Yeah, I could see it. I mean, I'm not saying that I can't see that. I'm just wondering.
You know, I like Luke personally. This isn't personal. This is just we have a sample size here now.
Yeah,
okay?
Well, he's coached two teams.
Yeah.
One was a LeBron Laker team when LeBron was not LeBron, and the other is Sacramento where nobody wins.
Yeah, well, look, Sacramento has enough talent to be better than this, is what I would say.
I'm just rooting for the guy. That's all. I'm just rooting for the
guy. I know that your boy... is like a minority partner there and all that, but you tell him to get rid of Luke and
not only that,
a real coach.
And by the way, but I mean, you know, listen, I've been longtime friends with Big Bill, with Dad, and I've been watching Luke his whole life.
Sure.
And I'm just rooting
again,
for
this
success.
Isn't personal. This is just business.
Just rooting for a success. That's all I'm telling
you. I'm rooting for everyone's success. I'm done now. I'm off the Luke Walton bandwagon is what I'm saying. All right, that's what you need to know. Brought to you by Morongo. Play it safe, good time. Let's go to Joey. Joey on the 605. Joey, what's up? Joey.
Hey, freaking Joey over here. What's going on, Joey?
All right, no Joey.
We lost Joey.
No Joey.
All right, JoJo in Cerritos wants to talk about the vaccine. What's up, JoJo?
Hey, guys, love the show. You know, when it comes to the vaccine distribution, honestly, like you said, if you're in the area, just capitalize off of it because we're trying to get everybody as vaccinated as much as possible. I work at Kaiser over in Downey, and, you know, we're one of the worst Kaisers in the Southern California region. And we want everybody to get vaccinated so we get to get over this damn thing.
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it. Like, I got a couple of friends of mine that are like people that are like, I'm not getting it. I don't need it. I'm not getting it. I'm like, oh, dude, really? Honestly, like, you should think about it's bigger than you. It's not just about you. And they're like, no, because other people will get vaccinated and I'm young and healthy and I'll never have to put that in my body. And then I know other people that are like, I just don't trust it. I don't believe in it. Me, I'm like, dude, if I'm in a CVS and they go over the PA and they go, hey, yo, we got 8 extra vaccines. You either take them now or we throw them in the garbage. I'm like, here's my arm. Put it in. Although, George, I would like to get the J&J one-shot deal because I've had a lot of friends that have gotten the 2 shots, and on the second shot, they got like 2 days of really not feeling very
good. Yeah, feverish and all that. Yeah. My father-in-law, who's an elderly person, had that. Though my mother-in-law did not have that reaction, and she got the Moderna vaccine. They got the same ones, and she felt fine. And he got a little bit of the fever chills and all that stuff for a day. My mom got the 2 Pfizers and nothing. She was good to go the whole way.
My parents also got the 2-shot deal, and neither of them experienced any sorts of issues. Yeah. Waited in a park for 5 hours, like parked. Like, imagine being on the freeway when there's an accident and you can't move for 5. They waited in their car in a park for 5 hours till they could pull up and get the shot. So they got it. So I'm glad about that.
So let me ask you this, Laura. I'll ask you. If you're at a CVS and they say, hey, we got 8 doses here, you know, we're going to throw them away because we got to throw them away at this stage if someone doesn't take them, would you feel bad about taking it?
No.
Yeah, because that's the reality of the situation, right?
I know, Mason felt so guilty, like he had cut the line, like there were a bunch of 85-year-old ladies in front of him.
He didn't cut the line.
He didn't do anything.
He won the lottery.
Right.
Exactly.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. Good for him.
Yeah, I would get it, and I wouldn't feel bad about it at all.
Yeah, I mean, you bought a lottery ticket by accident, mm-hmm. and it just, or you literally looked on the floor and saw $20 or $100 or whatever, and you're like, all right, I'm gonna pick it up, right? It's not a wallet, it's a cash, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what it is. That's what happened.
Congrats, Mace. Maybe you'll finally come out of your hibernation, dude.
Yeah, maybe. I mean,
right, there's somebody smart on the phone. There's a lot of smart
people. Well, I got
to
break because Chris Morales has challenged me, and I'm going to punch him in the face when I see him whenever we both get the vaccine. But I'm going to break because he has challenged me. We're going to take a break. We're going to get into more on these calls at 877-710-ESPN. Would you feel bad about the vaccine if it happened to you like it happened to Mace? We'll continue this discussion on the Curry thing and his comments. Plus, Kyle Kuzma with an interesting shout-out for LeBron. We'll have that coming up. Trevor Bauer also made some news. All that coming up in 2.5 minutes.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
If I stand up, I'm going to go and drive to Orange County and kick your ass, Chris Morales. That's what I'm going to do.
It's true, though, George. It's true. Like, I don't know about everybody else in their real lives, and, like, people are working from home, obviously, and I find that I sit in a chair behind a desk for hours and hours. Like, when I see my iPhone report at the end of the week and they tell me that my phone, you know, I'm using it 7 hours a day, I'm like, oh, my God, really? If I looked at my iWatch or whatever, my Apple Watch, if it told me how long I sit all freaking day. My girlfriend, Rachel, George, got me for my birthday one of these stand-up desk things. Have you seen these things, right? Like, one's things for your keyboard. You got computers. I got my microphone.
We have them in the office.
And then she got me, this is the smartest thing. Just understand something. I am way too cheap to ever buy this stuff for myself. I'd rather have back pain. I'd rather have other problems associated with sitting all day than buy a stand-up desk. And George, one of these like rubber mat things that you stand on, you're stretching your hamstrings,
right,
your calves, my feet. It's like I got golf balls underneath the arches of my feet. I feel freaking great today, Morales.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think at ESPN they have the option of allowing your desk to be have a stand-up component to it. So, because, you know, Disney's nice that way, and we have, like, these ergonomically great chairs and all that stuff in the studio and in the building. So yeah, I mean, that stuff is good for you. You should, you know, especially as you age, Kaplan, you know, those things are things you should take into account, you know?
Yeah, I'm not really sure I am aging, you know?
Are you on, like, HGH or something?
Not on HGH, but I am on a very consistent routine of testosterone. Oh, my.
Oh, you're on a drip?
Oh, dude. Whew. This thing will change your life, man. I'm telling you that right now. When you take that testosterone, you leave that doctor's office, man, you'll run headfirst right through a brick wall. I mean, it is just instant energy.
Yeah, I bet.
You'll find out.
I mean,
a couple more years, you'll find out.
Maybe. I'm not knocking you. I'm just saying, listen, whatever you got to do, you know what I mean? Let's go to the phones. We got people holding on patiently. Real quick, though, Kyle Kuzma tweeted about LeBron's defense. Says he should be defensive first team. And you and I were talking before the show, and you were kind of surprised by his tweet, weren't you?
I just feel like, is there ever a time where everybody's just not sucking up to LeBron? It's like his teammates have to put out that he should be on the all-defensive team. Don't we all already think that?
But he hasn't been in a really long time.
Okay.
That's his 2014.
I guess Kyle Kuzma's endorsement is probably going to change that then.
No. But he has been playing great defense this year.
Well, yeah, he's been playing great.
He played great defense last year, I thought, too, and didn't make the team.
I don't really understand how LeBron doesn't make any of these teams. Every team should just be LeBron and then add four guys.
Well, George knows about this. Like, George, doesn't LeBron usually wait till the end of the year to, like, March, April, and then start
playing
defense?
Right, well, he did that in Cleveland. And again, that's why 2014 was the last year. But last year, he was balling out playing defense from the beginning of the season last year when Anthony Davis came. So it was surprising he didn't make it last year. And he has been like he turned the clock back the last couple of games specifically, where in the Portland game, opponents shot 2 of 11 against them, only 18%. And yesterday, he was all over the floor getting steals, blocks, or whatever. Like, it would look like 2013 LeBron for a minute.
Well, I really loved what Frank Vogel said earlier today. And for anybody that wasn't with us at 4:15 in the afternoon, I would highly encourage you to go back and find our interview with Vogel on our podcast.
We're going to replay that at 6:30, actually.
Oh, yeah. We are. Okay, great. That's
so
good.
In like less than 10 minutes, we're going to
run it back. Perfect, because one of the things we talk about with Frank Vogel, and I'm just going to give you a little preview here, is what it is to try and convince LeBron to sit, to rest. And Frank talks about, you know, collaborating rather than demanding, you know, and I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. Oh, no. It is a group effort. And he mentioned Mike Mancias, who's been one of LeBron's longtime trainers and whatnot. Yeah, it is. It is a group effort in regards to LeBron's team and the team. Yeah, sure. But right. LeBron's team knows his body because they've been with him for so long.
Yeah, and LeBron, for all the talk about how much he should be playing or shouldn't playing, this new phrase that we came up with this year, load management, it's like social distancing. Like, where did that come from?
No, that had come up this year. That's been around for a minute.
It's just like a pitch count, you know?
Greg Popovich started that stuff.
Look, all I'm saying to you is I liked what Frank Vogel said, which is if LeBron is telling us he can and wants to, then that's what he does.
Right.
And that's what we accept.
We'll hear from Frank Vogel again in about 8 minutes. If you missed it earlier, he was great. We had fun with him. We talked to him about dancing, like Sean McVay. What else did we talk to him? We talked to him about high school sports because he's got some daughters playing high school sports in the South Bay. And we talked, obviously, Lakers basketball with him. So we got a lot of stuff with him coming up in a second. You know, you mentioned just kind of playing and resting and aging and all that. Is Drew Brees not retiring? I know you know him a little bit. Like I saw him working out and pushing, like, all sorts of weights and doing, like, these crazy, you know, workouts and whatnot. Like, that dude isn't going to try to come back and play, is he?
Okay, so I do think Drew Brees will come back and try and play.
Why?
Here's why. Okay. This is exactly like the conversation we were just having where you were absolutely guaranteeing me that everything you were saying about the way LeBron accepts things from Steph Curry is absolutely 100% fact, and there's no other way to look at it. Mm-hmm. The thing about Brees is this. Brees, you talk about hyper-competitive people. Brees looks at Tom Brady, and he says, but he's 2 years older than I am. And you know what? I've got 80-plus thousand passing yards in my career. And when I show up in somebody else's locker room, they'll all follow my lead too. But the thing that Brees doesn't have that Brady has is those six rings that when he comes to a new team and Brady says to everybody, follow my lead, and everybody goes, okay, Tom, whatever you say. Brees has credibility, but he doesn't have Brady credibility.
Right.
The thing about Brees is this. When Jay Glazer of Fox Sports, shout out Jay, I'm sure you're out there listening. When Jay Glazer reported that Brees was done with the Saints, I didn't hear him say he was retiring. I heard him say he's done with the Saints. If you're the Saints, you haven't won a Super Bowl in 12 years. It's kind of time to move on from Drew Brees. But if you're Drew Brees, you may not want to be done. And the video that everybody's been talking about today, it's not for me the way he's working out, the intensity with which he's working out. It's the whole social media setup of, hey, Drew, for anybody who hasn't seen it, Brees is pushing this sled with weights. And the trainer, his name's Todd Durkin, is yelling, Drew, come back, come back. And Drew's going further than he's ever gone. And he's running for longer than he's ever run.
Right. And super he sets orchestrated. Up a, right. Yes.
That's my point. Super yeah. choreographed, orchestrated, which to me, George, is a setup for I'm not done.
Yeah, and that's if that's the case, I mean, I guess good for him, but his noodle arm isn't going to necessarily help him throw the football, you know, anymore.
Noodle arm, lots of injuries. You know, I don't know if Drew Brees can come back, and but I'll tell you this, the Saints probably are kind of done, you know? And Brees would have to find somebody that's like Brady found Tampa Bay, kind of Super Bowl ready.
Yeah, we'll see. I wouldn't sign Drew Brees. I don't think he's got anything left in the tank, to be honest with you. But all right, Frank Vogel's got tons in the tank. We spoke to him earlier. If you missed it, it was fun. We talked some basketball. We had some fun with him. He's going to join us in 3.5 minutes.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Sedano, LZ, and Cap with you here. LZ out today. The head coach of your world champion Los Angeles Lakers, friend of the program, Frank Vogel, joins us now here. Frank, I was just telling the guys that you know it's a good game for you when you don't have to talk to me in the third quarter. Hell, you wouldn't have to have talked to me in the first quarter yesterday.
That's always the plan with these national televised games. Like, if we could just get up 30 by the end of the third, then I don't have to do that in-game interview, and everything's just easier that way.
How much do you hate talking to us in that scenario? And I know you're a nice guy, so you will do whatever it takes to do whatever, you know, the league wants and the partners want. But I know you guys hate talking to us in the middle of a game.
It's good for the big picture, right? It's good for the game. You know, it's good for the fans to have that type of access. But, you know, obviously when you're in that moment and, you know, the quarter comes to a close, all you're thinking about is your rotations and what sets you want to run come out to start the fourth. And you're just thinking about winning the game. So it is a little bit of a distraction. But, you know, again, you just keep the big picture in mind. It's just part of the job.
The funny thing is, I always end up, sometimes it happens with you, but it feels like my biggest nightmare, and it happens regularly, is like your team is up, and then all of a sudden you blow a lead, and now you're like trailing or it's tied, and I got to deal with an upset version of you or whoever is coaching in that scenario. I feel like that happens all the time. So if it happens again when it's you and me, just be aware I didn't do that, okay? That was your team who did that.
I'm going to take it out on you, George. I'm going to go straight Coach Popovich on you next time, you know, we lose the lead and you're right in front of me like that.
Listen, I got Popovich to crack a couple of years ago and laugh, okay? That is a rare occurrence. So, but, Scott, can you ask Frank what we were talking about with Sean McVay the other day? We were talking about dancing, Coach Vogel. So I want Scott to ask you the question that we posed to McVay.
Well, Coach, good afternoon. It's great to talk to you for the first time. How are you today?
Good, Scott. How you doing?
Doing really great, Coach. Thank you very much. So Raheem Morris is the new defensive coordinator of the Rams. He came on the air. He told us Sean McVay is a great dancer. We bring Sean on. He tells us a couple of vodkas, he's a great dancer. We ask the question, if you could dance, what do you say?
A couple of beers, I'm a good dancer.
There we go.
Same answer. Yeah, same answer. You know, if I'm at a wedding or something like that, yeah, I'll bust into some moves. But I'm not a great dancer overall, no.
No, wedding dancer, though. Wedding
dancer. When you won the championship, did you get down a little bit?
No. No, we were in a bubble. There's no party. We had a little restaurant. That's it. There was no major celebration.
Well, Coach, let me ask you this, though. Let me jump right into it, because what I'm curious about is this. When Anthony Davis goes out, and you guys now know it's going to be a while, do you have to sit down with the assistant coaches and kind of go back to the drawing board of, well, what do we do? How do we adjust? What do we have? And how do we go about winning games? I mean, can you just talk us through what happens on the realization that Anthony Davis isn't going to be with you for a while and then having to make changes to the lineup?
Yeah, well, that's exactly what you do. You know, you have to adjust. You have a few different ways you can go with your lineups and, you know, your style of play and whatnot. And the number one thing that comes to mind, obviously, is making sure that, you know, we don't put too much of it on LeBron or on any one player, you know, to try to pick up the slack. You know, it's got to be a team effort. But you do go through the different scenarios you can go with with your starting lineup and how you're going to use rotation and what, you know, how guys' roles are going to change. So we came out of the gates with one way. We lost a few in a row. We shifted and, we got beaten at that Utah game, but the last two have been pretty good.
All right. Frank, as far as like making these changes to the lineup and, you know, hey, here's a starting rotation. Things aren't going so well. Let's start over here and see what we got. Is it remotely predictable at all?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, you have a way that you think you can win. And, you know, when you see it play out on the floor, you know, you see some areas that present problems. You know, one of the problems I felt like with the first three games is we were playing a 9-man rotation, and I felt like I wanted to go a little deeper than that. You know, so, you know, that's what the shift in the starting lineup really triggered is trying to go one more deep. So, you know, hopefully we were shooting the ball so poorly, you know, so hopefully, you know, getting another guy in there and shrinking guys' minutes a little bit, the rotations down a little bit, would just help us stay a little more fresh than we looked in some of those games.
Frank Vogel, the head coach of your world champion Los Angeles Lakers, with us here on 710 ESPN. So obviously having Schroeder has been a huge lift for you guys. But I noticed yesterday you were staggering him and LeBron some. What went into that, Frank?
Yeah, it was a game one plan with Dennis coming back where, you know, obviously we've been struggling with the lineups when LeBron's out of the game. And, you know, obviously using Dennis in those minutes would be beneficial. But at the same time, he hadn't been on a court for a week or so. So we were concerned about his legs and conditioning. So, you know, the coaching staff and I just discussed potentially using a short first sub for him. For Dennis, you know, get him out there before the 7-minute mark and then bring him back for LeBron, you know, so he can be fresh in those minutes when LeBron's out. And, you know, the first two games we've done that, it's looked pretty good. So we'll probably stick with it for now.
Coach, I want to ask you about LeBron and minutes. You know, when the losing streak was happening, the one thing people were saying was LeBron's playing too much. And my question is, you know, can you sit him? I mean, what goes into his playing or not playing? Do you guys talk about it before games? I'm just curious because it's got to be kind of a weird position. Like, dude, I think you need to sit, but he says, I don't want to sit.
No, it's a group decision. You know what I mean? Like, if we feel like he needs to sit and, you know, we can talk to him and talk to the medical team and all come up with a group decision that we all agree with, you know, then that can be the right thing to do. But if he's feeling well and wants to play, we're going to have him out there. And, you know, we trust him. He knows his body more than anyone. Mike Nancias, the medical team, knows his body more than anyone. And if there's a reason to sit, he'll sit. But if there's not, then we expect him to, you know, he wants to be in there. And we're going to welcome him being in there. And I just think it's such a great example for, you know, not only the rest of his teammates, but, you know, I think the younger generation, you know, of this league. You know, as you've seen a lot of teams move towards guys sitting out and missing a lot of games, you know, I just think he sets a great example. So, we make these decisions as a group,
He's always open-minded to hear everyone's perspective, as are we, to hear his perspective. And like I said, we make these decisions as a group.
Frank All Vogel right. joining us here. Go ahead, Scott. I'm sorry.
Well, Frank, I think it's really super interesting to hear you talk about that, because I think a lot of us have a perception like you just can't tell them what to do or when to sit. But it sounds like it's a collaboration amongst the entire team.
No, it absolutely is. You know, and we've had a great partnership. You know, I think since LeBron's been here, beginning with Rob Pelinka and Kurt Rambis and LeBron, and then myself and my coaching staff since we got here, to just talk these things out and see what makes sense. And, you know, when you collaborate and you make group decisions, usually you're moving things in the right direction, and you're making pretty smart decisions with things. So, you know, it's a great process that's worked for us this far, and we'll continue to do so.
Frank, you've won two in a row since the four-game losing streak. The Jazz game, though, like, how do you deal with that after? Do you just throw that one away? Do you put yourself through the misery of watching it again as a group? Like, how does that work?
You know, if we had practice scheduled, we would have watched it as a group and just looked at ways we could have been better. You know, we always remove the result of the game from our film sessions. You know, like, let's just look at, you know, sort of what happened. Look at how well we executed our habits, you know, some things tactically we could do differently, and let's try to grow from this game, regardless of whether we won, we lost, we won big, we lost big. It doesn't really matter. You know, this was a situation where after the overtime game and traveling, I felt like our team was fatigued, so I gave them off the next day and the next morning off of, you know, leading into the Portland game, to try to just come into that game as fresh as possible with our minds and with our bodies. And, you know, all we really said about that Utah game is we sucked last game. Let's put it behind us and let's beat Portland. And, you know, sometimes that's the right approach. Sometimes it's not. But that's what we did in that game. And we were able to get the job done versus the Blazers.
Can you give me I'm going to play. We're going to do a little role play here because I didn't get a chance to talk to you yesterday in game. But my guy, Dave Pasch, got the greatest answer from you in that Portland game in the third quarter. And I want you to recreate that. Are you ready?
Okay.
All right. I'm Dave Pasch. And Frank Vogel, Lakers head coach for this year. You know, Frank, Portland is, you know, you've taken the lead here in this situation. What's the key to winning the game the rest of the way here?
Oh, no.
Yeah, I think you said, what's the key to winning the fourth quarter? And my answer was simple. I should have pulled down my mask to show a smile because, like, you know, with the mask, you don't really get to show your true emotions. So, you know, it was said in jest, but we got to slow down Dame Dolla. That's what it comes down. We know he's going to have the ball. So that's the guy we got to slow down.
And I loved obvious, it. I was sitting on my couch howling of laughter. They were, too, on the broadcast because of the way you said it. Now, you didn't have to take the mask off because I could just tell with the way your face moved and your eyes moved that you were having a ball with that. But you were right, but also you nailed it. Like, that to me, I want that. I want you to give everybody's nickname every time you do that. Like, I feel like that could be your move.
Well, it was almost like, hey, let's state the obvious here. We got to slow down that guy.
Right.
Hey, Frank, let me talk to you about something that's non-Laker, non-basketball. You ready?
Okay.
All right. George told me, because I've been a big proponent of the Let Them Play California movement, and happy to see that high school sports are coming back. George tells me you have some high school athletes in the family. Is that right?
I do, yes.
Can we hear a little bit more about who, what they play, et cetera?
Yeah, I have two daughters that play soccer and one potentially playing lacrosse, you know, at our local high school. And, you know, they've been out all year and, you know, they're just now talking about, we actually have a meeting tomorrow night, about the resumption of play and what that's all going to look like. So, you know, we're really excited about it. I think it's long overdue and, you know, I'll be excited to see, to be able to go and watch some soccer games hopefully soon.
How old are the girls and what grades are they in?
I have a junior and freshman.
Okay, so gotcha.
17, just turned 17 and 14.
And are they club soccer players as well or high school players?
Well, yeah, they both play club, but, you know, the way, you know, with the pandemic, there's always, you know, certain restrictions. And, you know, I think they're going to be put in a position where they have to choose one or the other, you know, because obviously you don't want, you know, your athletes playing with a certain group of players, you know, and potentially being exposed to the virus and then bringing that back to your, you know, your team group. So, you know, there's some restrictions there, some tough decisions, and that's kind of what we're going through in our household right now.
Oh, dude, I know, man. I've been there. Well, not through the pandemic, but I've had a daughter who played high school soccer, club soccer, went on to play college soccer, and just, I mean, it's the greatest thing ever. Like, I thought, oh, my God, I've got three daughters. I need to have a boy to play some sports. But I'm telling you, watching your girls play sports, I mean, it was like my favorite thing to do. I don't know how much you must love it as well, but and especially going from coach to father and fan.
Yeah, I don't miss a game if I'm in town or if I can be there. I'm going to be there, and you know, it's been that way since they were, you know, 4 and 6 years old. You know, it is just one of the most enjoyable things in my life and something I miss very dearly.
Frank Vogel with us here. Last thing before we let you go, we were making fun of Scott because he occasionally takes one too many selfies for my liking personally.
That is not true, Coach. That is not true.
It is. It's fine.
It's not true, Coach.
He won't admit it. It's fine. You know, it's okay. Frank Vogel, ever are you a selfie guy at all or no?
I would say minimally. You know, okay. I think like if I'm in a place you know, where I want to, you know, send a picture to my wife and daughters of, hey, look where I'm at. I'm going to take a selfie in those situations.
Right.
I do take, you know, when I'm taking pictures of myself and my daughters or myself and my wife, I do think the selfie is more appropriate than you handing your phone to somebody to take your picture.
Especially now.
Right?
Yeah, totally.
That's the right way to do it.
Very effective.
And I'll throw this 2 cents into the selfie that nobody does autographs anymore. There's no autographs, right? The modern day autograph is can I get a picture with you? So,
right.
You know, you get selfies in those situations. Of course, pre-pandemic, right now it's like, let's be, you know, stand six feet apart. If you want my picture, you stand over there. The camera taker, the picture taker stands over there.
Yeah.
You know, those types of things. So,
dude, it's funny because I was at the airport doing your game in the preseason against Phoenix, and I ran into Charles Barkley. And even with a mask on, he didn't even care about 6 feet. People were asking him. He'd still do it. I was like, Charles, you're a better man than me, bro. I am not pulling that off, but good Lord. But, yeah, I am with you there. Coach. Yeah. Always a pleasure, man. Thank you for making time for us. Best of luck, continued success, and we'll talk to you down the line soon. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thanks. Take care.
All right, that's Frank Vogel, the head coach of your Los Angeles Lakers. All right, coming up next, we got to talk about something that happened on the postgame yesterday with our boy Sliwa. We got called out, Kaplan. We got called out. So
by
we're going to have that.
Yeah,
no. No, but we got called out, and I'm going to explain in a second what that's all about. Plus, this Canelo fight, which is a joke. We got to talk about that, too. All right, all coming up in 2.5 minutes. Well, actually, less. It's coming up in a minute.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You know, Rocky IV, I read this article one time, and it was pretty funny. It talked about how Rocky IV, even though I do love it, my childhood memories of watching it are just hilarious too. But, you know, it's like 33% or like maybe more than that. Maybe 35% of it is basically a musical montage. You know that, right?
What do you mean?
Like it's this. Like it's just...
Oh, like Rocky's working out in Siberia and it's just
right.
Music?
Or in this scene where he's in the Ferrari driving, thinking about Drago killing Apollo and you know, all that stuff. Yeah, like over a third of the movie is just a music montage.
That's funny. I had no idea that that was the case.
Next time you watch the movie or it pops up, just think about that. And every time one of these scenes come up where they do the music montage, you're going to laugh because it happens way more than you think.
I think that the last Rocky movie that I saw was this one with Drago when he kills Apollo Creed.
Yeah.
How many other Rocky movies since this one have there been?
They did the Tommy Morrison one, which was terrible.
Oh, okay. I saw that one. I saw that
after this.
My bad.
And then they stopped doing Rocky movies, like in theory, sort of. So they did Rocky Balboa after that, which wasn't bad, I thought. It was basically him coming out of retirement to fight an exhibition fight with the character's name was Mason the Line Dixon. Okay, like that was the name, which is such a great boxing name, to be honest with you. It really was just fantastic. Antonio Tarver was the boxer who played Mason the Lion Dixon. So really well done there. And then they started the Creed movies after that, which were all fantastic, I thought.
I haven't seen them. And you know me, I'm not like much of a movie goer.
Yeah.
And I feel bad about it because I love the Rocky series, but I haven't seen the Creed films. I need to see them. I need to catch
up.
Creed
movies are excellent. Creed movies are excellent.
Hey, speaking of boxing, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago, we talked about that fight, and I'm trying to remember the guys' names because it was a big upset, and the guy who...
Yeah, Valdez and Burchell. Yeah.
Valdez landed that just insane knockout punch. Mm-hmm. I thought the fight was going to be over in the second or third round.
Right.
Did anybody stop what they were doing on Saturday night to watch Canelo Alvarez on an app called DAZN? And I don't want to make it sound like nobody's ever heard of DAZN before, because if you want to see Canelo fight, that's where you have to go. But did you stop what you were doing in your life on Saturday night to watch Canelo fight? George?
Did I what?
Did you watch? Did you stop?
I did watch it. Yeah, all three rounds of that garbage. It was a joke. It was awful, yes.
Okay. So this was like one where I was like, you know what? I'm going to get this on Twitter. I'm going to see this on Twitter. I don't expect this to last long. I'm trying to remember the exact odds, but you had to bet like, I don't know, like 25 grand.
It was ridiculous.
To win $100 on Alvarez. And I was thinking, I'll bet against Canelo, because I told you this last week. You know, he plays so much golf that I wonder when he actually trains. But he's fighting these nobodies. He's knocking them out. And what it looks like to me is he signed like this $300 million 10-fight deal with this company, DAZN. And the sooner he gets all these fights out of the way, the sooner he can get out of that contract and go make a lot more money. So it seems like he's loading up fights against nobodies just to get these fights, you know, check the boxes. Because it was not a great fight. I mean,
no, it was awful. And I tweeted out immediately, like, this is the best fight they can find Canelo. And you know, I get the Canelo fans. They were like, well, this is a mandatory fight. He had to fight. And I'm like, dude, I get it. But, you know, like, this is a real problem for him. Is like, who is he going to fight? Because there's not very many options for him.
Yeah, did you see at the end of the fight? This was great. There was a guy in the ring, and he had on, behind Canelo, he had on a Jake Paul t-shirt. Do you know who he is?
Yeah, I know Jake Paul.
Okay, so for anybody who doesn't know him, he's like this obnoxious YouTube guy who, you know, he fought that guy, who was it, the former NBA player, was it, I lost his name, something, maybe was it Robinson? Who did he punch out and he knocked out?
Nate Robinson.
Thank you, yes. There you go. So this guy, Jake Paul, he's a real instigator, you know, and he's an attention hound. And by the way, the guy's great at what he does, even though he might be a complete jerk, but he knows how to get, you know, people to click on his stuff. And he had a guy in the ring jumping up and down with a Jake Paul t-shirt. And did you see Canelo Alvarez? Hey, get the F out of here, man. What the F are you doing? And like, where was security?
I mean, who knows, dude? You know, like, I don't know. Like, it just... I mean, when you've got that kind of cash, I guess that people thought maybe it was part of his entourage. Who knows? You know, who knew? Whatever. I don't know. Like,
you know,
I don't know that, but I did notice that too. But
I told you, I told you my dad is a Florida State boxing inspector, right? And my father told me that he was in Canelo's dressing room before the fight. Canelo took over the entire Miami Dolphins locker room, George. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've been in this locker room before.
Because the fight was at Hard Rock Stadium, which is the Dolphins Stadium.
So big-ass play. I mean, the locker room for 65, 70 guys, plus, you know, all the 120 people.
Yeah.
And Canelo and his entire entourage took over the entire place, you know, and jam-packed. So he travels with a giant pack. He's a monster superstar. If he shows up in Mexico anywhere, it's like Michael Jackson just showed up, which is why he lives in San Diego. And listen, not exactly an exciting piece of content on Saturday night from Canelo Alvarez.
No, it was bad. It was terrible. And they have a real problem on their hands trying to figure out who's going to fight with him next. So it just is what it is. Speaking of fighting, someone was picking a fight with us on the postgame show last night as I was driving home from the arena. There was a gentleman who called in because of our panic meter discussion last week. We had several of them in regards to the Lakers and their losing streak. Let me hear it. Let me hear what the gentleman said.
Squeeze in one more quick call. Deshaun in Moreno Valley. What's going on, Deshaun?
Hey, what's going on, Alan? First thing, I would love for you to call into the Sedano, LZ, and Cap show. Calm those guys down because they're ready to jump off a cliff over a few losses.
Yeah, we'll be fine.
It's Sliwa just dismissing us. And, you know, we'll be fine.
Right. Well, shout out to Deshaun. And listen, Deshaun, let me just have a minute here to explain something to you.
Yeah.
I'm going to live the emotional roller coaster.
Right.
There's going to be a week where the Rams beat the Buccaneers, and I'm going to tell you on Monday they're going to the Super Bowl. Then there's going to be a week where the Rams are going to lose to the Jets, and I'm going to tell you that Sean McVay should be fired. Okay? This is the emotional roller coaster that I can't help myself. And so once you're on the roller coaster and the Lakers lose four games, previous to that, my panic meter was at a five. Hey, no right. problem. LeBron will carry everybody. But then all of a sudden you lose four games, George, and my panic meter all of a sudden starts going up to like an 8-9. And it's true. I almost flatlined. So listen, I'm back. I'm good. They've won two straight games. LeBron looked great. Having Schroeder back has been amazing. Instant energy. And I'm back down to like a five. I'm good. Thank you.
Okay, good.
How about you?
I was at a healthy six. And, you know, I'm probably back down to like a 4.5. Yeah.
Okay, easy.
Yeah.
Bergman, you panicking at all? Or have the two wins kind of calmed you down too?
I've been stuck at a 4 the entire time. I'm staying right there.
What about Unique? What about our queen? She was at a 7.5 on the very first panic meter of the season. Laura?
I went down. I'm like at a 6. 5.56.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Greg is flatlined because he's worried about Trevor Bauer's first start, right? Like in spring training. Like he's one
it's
of
big
those
deal.
People that worries about Trevor Bauer's first start in spring training.
He looked great today. He looked great today. He gave one hit.
You know why?
Because
he's great. And it's only two innings. So there's that.
Two innings of just beautiful baseball.
So you'll love this. You ready? So Bergman and I are on the phone middle of the day today.
Yeah.
And he says, are you watching the Dodgers? And I'm like, what do you mean? What like a replay of last year's World Series? What do you mean? Am I watching the Dodgers? He's like, no, man. Spring training. I'm like, listen,
Game
bro.
Two.
You'll have to excuse me, okay? But no, I wasn't. And so then he's like, well, why don't you check it out? So I turned it on. I watched a little bit of this Dodger game, and I'm convinced that there were two people watching this Dodger game, George Sedano. It was
and
me.
And one of them was you, and the other was Greg Bergman.
That's right. You got it. That's right.
Very, very possible. But I love watching them. There's a lot going
Listen,
on.
I love spring training, okay? Particularly on the weekends. I love throwing on a spring training game and just doing stuff around the house. You can do that with baseball in general, regardless of whether it's spring training or the regular season. But spring training specifically, it's just nice to have on in the background. It's very calming. It's very relaxing. But I'm not like Greg. I'm not sitting here taking notes about, you know, the four-seamer that Trevor Bauer is throwing.
No. That's not what Greg
nice
was taking
ball.
Notes about. Not, no, yeah. Greg was taking notes today. Greg thinks of himself, and Greg, don't take this wrong, okay?
I take everything wrong. Go ahead.
I know, so that's why I'm preparing you. Don't take this
Thank
wrong.
Thank you.
Greg really, really thinks of himself not as a fan. He really, really fancies himself as like a scout. You know, like he's very into the battle at second base.
Yeah,
you know,
I am.
What's going to happen? This is a rarity. The Dodgers don't usually have openings. There's an opportunity here. He's thinking about this, George, from a very scouting perspective. Not from a, oh, hey, wonderful, spring training's back, cool, it's fun, baseball's coming. It's very scouting, very serious. Guy really thinks he knows his stuff.
I mean, listen, he does. And what I would say, though, is this, is that just because a guy performs well in the spring doesn't necessarily mean it's going to catapult him in the regular season. So it's why I take it all with a grain of salt, especially when you're talking about a 162-game season, 20 games or whatever, 20-plus games or whatever it is in spring training. I you know, it just you got to be a little more measured, I think, in that sport.
All right,
of course.
Greg, go ahead, George. I want to hear what Bergman thinks is the headline.
And I think that Greg understands that part of it, but he loves – the nuances of it. He loves it. And you know, it's cool for me, but I don't love it like that. I mean, I just talk to me when the season starts. I'm ready.
Same.
Sure.
Bergman,
but you know,
what's
as
the headline,
a producer,
but what is the headline of the Dodgers spring training? You were kind of talking to me about it today. What is the headline of Dodgers spring training?
That Dave Roberts is basically going to give Gavin Lux every opportunity to be the starting second baseman.
There you
year.
Go. Gavin Lux.
That's a big storyline for the Dodgers and
it
for
is.
Dodger
I'm not,
fans.
I'm trying to sell it for you.
Yeah, I know.
I'm introducing it like it's a big thing. There you go, Gavin Lux.
Well, but Scott's sitting here telling me like I would get all crazy about the Dodgers.
No,
but
I mean, it's
big,
fine.
Big
Look,
storyline.
Bro, We all have our things.
Everybody looks at sports differently. You know what I mean? And I think today is a great example when George is like, feels like very passionate about the sport that he covers, you know, and feels that like my opinion is naive, which maybe it is. And I feel very passionate about NFL football because that's the sport that I've covered for all these years. And Bergman, you just think like you're an analyst.
And that's why if Slee was there, I want to ask him why he dismissed us to Deshaun in Moreno Valley, who is a very loyal listener and caller to this station. Slee, it sounded like you were dismissing us there.
Slee,
were you dismissing us?
He's out of the studio, guys.
He's out of the studio? Mm-hmm. All right.
Conveniently. Well, oh, he's back. He's back. He's back.
He's back?
Yep.
All right. Well, you know, his show's about to start. Travis and Slee. Is today Lakers Talk?
Lakers Talk today.
I'm back.
All right, Lakers Talk today. Slee, were you dismissing us to Deshaun in Moreno Valley?
No dismissing, but just the... I think there was an incredible overreaction the last week or so. And the first thing I responded back to Deshaun was, yeah, the Lakers will be fine. They'll be fine.
They will be fine, but if Anthony Davis is fine.
So, listen, if we're not in February, actually now March, then let's say we're fast-forwarding 2 months ahead. I'd be more concerned, but I just think they still have so much time. And I paid no attention to that game against the Jazz. Didn't really pay much attention to that four-game losing streak, even though, you know, there are a couple games they obviously could have got. But without Schroeder, without Anthony Davis, it's just so incredibly difficult to pay attention to those games when those two pieces are missing.
All right, what's up on Lakers Talk tonight?
All right, McMenamin's coming on, and Mike Bresnahan, and we'll just continue to talk about the first half of the season.
I love
Don't overreact, Slee.
Yeah, exactly. Go dismiss McMenamin and Bresnahan. All right, don't do that. All right, Slee. Good talking to you, buddy. All right, Lakers Talk with Slee is up next. Excellent job, Scott Kaplan.
George Sedano, you were money today. Much love to our entire team and all the 710 listeners.
Greg and Laura, great job. Slee on Lakers Talk is up next. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 4. See ya.